We jumped out a window.
No, be quiet.
Hello, and welcome to episode 39 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. Tonight, we are going to hit Big Hero 6, Interstellar, and Nightcrawler, and we're going to kick things off with Big Hero 6, but before we get to that, I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
All right, let's do it with Big Hero 6. So I've been flipping out about this movie for quite some time because I'm sure people know at this point I have a serious thing for cute animated creatures, especially ones that are pet-like. And I will say that Baymax is kind of right up there now with the box trolls this year. It's just killing me. And actually Tars too, but we'll get to that. So Big Hero 6 is an animated Disney movie, and it's about a kid named Hero who's a super crazy genius, but instead of using his knowledge and intelligence for good, he is participating in illegal robot fighting, and he builds this incredible robot, and he can kill everybody, and he's winning, you know, big money and all that stuff, but it's no good, and his older brother, Tadashi, is not happy that he's doing that, so he lures him to this school that he's going to, and they call it the Nerd Lab, and he brings him into the Nerd Lab in hopes that, like, by introducing him to all of his friends, maybe Hero's gonna want to ditch the robot fighting and actually do legit studying and make some stuff, and Hero's intrigued by the idea, so he tries to go to school, but then something happens, and Hero winds up teaming up with this thing that Tadashi invented called Baymax, which is a home care professional. I forget the exact thing he says
He's a nurse. He's a nurse that is huggable.
He's like a big inflatable nurse, and he's got these programs in him. So basically, when Baymax scans somebody and he finds out, I don't know, you bumped your head or you've just had duct tape ripped off your arm, he'll be like, that is what hurts and I will fix it. And the movie's basically about Hero and Baymax teaming up to take on this villain and Hero kind of changing Tadashi's program to make him fit what they're trying to do and kind of almost insert himself into Baymax as well, which is kind of nice because you see the two of them come together. But beyond, I actually think that part of the movie worked really well. It's funny that you do lose Tadashi at a point, but he's always present because of what he has instilled in Baymax and what Hero is trying to do to Baymax. But the thing that I took away from this movie most is that Baymax is just the cutest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. I laughed.
Wow. I'm so quick to forget box trolls.
No, question. Yeah,
well,
is Baymax cuter than Groot? Because those are both put out by Disney this year, and they're both gentle giants. Which one is cuter? Showdown.
I think I have to say yeah. Because I was busy laughing at Big Hero 6 more so than I've laughed at any other movie this year, even any other comedy that's out there. This is one of the funniest movies I've seen all year. I mean, I want to say for the first half of the film, I was giggling or laughing out loud nonstop.
My favorite is the visual gag I don't want to give away of what happens when they teach him how to fist bump.
Oh, it's not even just a visual gag. It's also like an audio gag, and that was also going to be my. I was going to also say that that's my favorite joke.
I think the thing that made me laugh out loud was when he's got to let a little air out. I was laughing like a child for like 10 solid minutes after the jokes had come and gone.
There's a lot in this movie that's quite sweet and funny, and I do think Baymax is by far the best part of it. I think he's the most interesting character, even though he is a robot and like doesn't. I mean, he actually has an arc, which is exciting, because we've talked about some movies that have full-on people that don't have arcs. And what I also liked is the team that Hero builds around him, which is what Big Hero 6 is. And you've got Honey Lemon, who is basically Taylor Swift as a superhero, which I'm on board for. She's adorable. And there's Go-Go, who is like the tough chick who says, woman up, and she's like that college feminist that some of us were. And Now I'm a not in college feminist.
Except she's not chatty, unlike some people I know who were college feminists.
She doesn't do impressions either.
She does, yeah. I mean, I'm cooler than Go-Go, but she's pretty sweet.
So what we're all saying is Go-Go is actually nothing like Chrissy, despite what she would have you believe. Anyway, go on.
And so then there's there's Wasabi, who is voiced by Damon Wayans Jr., which just, as someone who still is sad that Happy Endings isn't around, made me very happy. And then TJ Miller, who is like the school mascot, who loves like all nerd things, including like kaiju, and like it's a very sweet little ensemble that like it's one of those things where in the real world you might never actually see these kind of people together because their personalities are completely different. But in a movie, it makes for a really lovely ensemble, and they get to do a lot of fun things together. And the energy of them reminded me of Teen Titans Go, which is a Cartoon Network show I'm pretty sure neither of you are watching, but it's fun! And it's also diverse in its casting, so that's another thing that's cool. But what bums me out about this movie is just that it is exactly what I thought it was going to be going in, where they lay out the plot, and I was like, oh, is it just going to be that this, this, and this happen? And it's exactly those things happen. So yeah, that I was kind of bummed out about.
I mean, it's not a Marvel Studios movie technically, but it is based on a Marvel comic. Marvel is owned by Disney, et cetera, et cetera. You guys already know this stuff. But the thing is, like, it's a Marvel movie, kind of, and it feels exactly like a Marvel movie. It feels so, like so many superhero origin stories that we've seen before. Granted, not as dark and gritty and whatnot, but...
A hero's journey about a boy named Hero.
Yeah, it follows all, like, it follows the same story beats, it's the same formula. I mean, I think it's a really well-executed take on it, but it's still, you know, there are very few surprises here.
There's no denying that, but at the same time, I think that they overcome that with just the cleverness of Baymax and characters like that, and all. I mean, really, the whole group, for that matter. All the other ones, I thought that the designs that they were doing in the beginning were so well integrated into their costume, and, like, their approach fighting was kind of something, like, I've never seen before. I mean, I've never seen
more of that.
Characters with these abilities, yeah. But one thing I wanted to know was, what was Hero's suit capable of doing besides hooking to Baymax? Is that just his thing?
Well, Hero just seems like kind of a ripoff of How to Train Your Dragon to me, because, like, Yeah, like, Hero's suit doesn't do anything except magnetically attach to Baymax, and then he flies on him.
I think he has some vague, like, capabilities of being stronger or being able to shoot things out of his hands or something, but yeah, its main purpose is that it attaches him to Baymax.
Yeah, which, like, literally they have, like, a codependent relationship, like, because Baymax, like, needs to make Hero feel better, and Hero needs Baymax to do anything superpowered, which is weird when you think about everybody else he has equipped, like, with their tech to do all these crazy cool things. And then he has invented this incredible tech himself, but he doesn't utilize it in his suit. It's a strange thing. I like this movie fine, but, like, the thing is, Disney came off this run where they did Tangled, which I thought was amazing, and Wreck-It Ralph, which still makes me, like, laugh and cry and detest it. I watched it again the other night and both those things. And Frozen, which, as you know, you all know watching, we love Frozen. And, like, Big Hero 6 just doesn't, like, click in at that level. Like, Big Hero 6, it's, like, not Meet the Robinsons, but it's just
I don't think it's trying to click in at that level, though. I think it achieved exactly what it set out to do, which is kind of make a Marvel superhero movie, but for a younger audience. And
but it's
that just so happens to appeal to adults, too.
I just think it's very bare bones. I just wanted this to be a richer movie than it is. Like, I think they introduce a lot of interesting characters, but we don't get to know them very well, except for Baymax and Hero. And
I bet we will, though, because it seems like the kind of movie that's going to have sequels. Like, Disney doesn't always do sequels. There's no sequels to, you know, Frozen or Tangled or Wreck-It Ralph, as, you know, the movies that you mentioned. But this is a Marvel movie, and like all Marvel movies, it's going to have sequels, I bet.
I'd be curious to see how far they could take all of, you know, the Baymax type gags. Like, how far that can go until, you know, you've kind of tapped them all.
Yeah. I liked it. I did like Big Hero 6. I think it's a mediocre Disney movie and not an amazing Disney movie. But I have to say, my favorite thing about the movie actually might be the design of the town they created, San Francisco, which is San Francisco.
I heard you gasp when the movie opened and there was San Francisco.
And it's like, we saw it in 3D, and I have to say, like, the 3D, like, they plunge you into this. And, like, I've been to San Francisco, very fancy like that. And, like, it did strike me with that sense of when I actually stood on the Golden Gate Bridge and was just like, oh, my God, like, this sense of awe. And, like, the movie has that in their environment, and I really love that. I just don't think the story met the design level.
I think that, for me, I wouldn't say mediocre. I would just say it's good. It's a pretty good movie made, you know, like really good by the fact that Baymax is in it. He is the shining star. He's like what makes the movie work. He's what makes this more feel like more than just like, you know, another rote exercise in hero's journey, you know, plotline.
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I don't think it was ever trying to be a Frozen or a Tangled, and I think it set out to do what I said before.
Absolutely, yeah.
To be a childlike Marvel superhero movie, and it completely won me over, just because it didn't have, you know, maybe the same amount of layers to the plot as some other films, kind of didn't put me off at all. I had so much fun with it. I walked out absolutely thrilled with a massive smile on my face, and now I want to buy every Baymax thing I could find.
You know, as an adult, As an adult, I can see what Christy is saying, but as a kid, I think I would love this every bit as much as I would.
Yeah, I think kids will love it. I think that's fair. I think kids will love it, and I think parents won't be bored.
I think parents will not only won't be bored, I think they'll be entertained. It's an entertaining movie. I'm an adult. I saw it with a bunch of adults, none of whom have kids, and we're all super.
No, that's totally true. I think it's a totally satisfying movie on a first watch. I just didn't feel like with the other Disney movies I mentioned, like, I go back to those still and love digging into them and love finding new things in them, and this one I just don't think I'll do that with. Like, it's fine, and I'm sure
if anyone find any clues in Fred's room?
I heard there were some, but I'm not...
I kept looking around, but I honestly I didn't see anything.
Yeah, but overall, so Big Hero 6, thumbs up.
Oh, also, cameo to date. I'm going to throw that out there.
What?
Keep an eye out for the Stan Lee cameo.
All right.
I thought that was charming, and normally the Stan Lee cameos make me cringe. But this one was cute.
It was a good one. It was clever. Subtle. Nice and subtle.
So, on that note, we're going to talk about another movie that is very pro-science, but different in pretty much every other regard.
Except I figured out something they have in common, which is maybe what made you gasp. Both of these movies have characters that are robots that have more humanity than the humans at times.
I don't think that's true of Interstellar. But anyway, we can circle back to that. So Interstellar, in case you somehow haven't heard, is the new movie directed by Christopher Nolan. It takes place in Earth a little bit in the future, where the Earth is basically dying. You know, like, it's humans have horribly screwed up the Earth, and now all the crops are dying. People are starving. And it's gotten so bad that they're basically saying, like, you know, in the next generation or two, all of humanity is going to die out. So Matthew McConaughey plays a guy who used to be a NASA pilot but is now a farmer. And then he sort of finds slash is recruited by NASA, which is still operating in secret in the middle of nowhere, and apparently they have this crazy plan that it involves using wormholes to visit other planets and try to find a new one where humans can live. I think I did a pretty good job with
this. Yeah,
it. It
that's kind a of good description.
So I just wanted to give myself a little credit for that.
It's probably also because, like, I mean, the basics of the first act are pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
but it's when you get to the end of the movie that, like, I dare anyone
the really
to
complicated
describe
stuff.
What the ending is.
Yes, the really complicated stuff is in third act. But so that's Matthew McConaughey. You know, when he's a farmer, he lives with two kids, including a daughter who is a lot like him. Her name is Murph, and she's an important character. And his father-in-law, played by John Lithgow. And I say father-in-law because that's the father of the mother of his children, who is dead because it's a Christopher Nolan movie and not for any other reason. And then when he's in the spaceship trying to find other planets, he's hanging out with Anne Hathaway, Wes Bentley, and David Gaffney, and a couple of robots that you guys super, super love.
Yeah, I fucking loved Tars and Case. Seriously,
yeah.
I want one of those. I was so fat. I could have just watched an entire movie about, like, how they were made and how they move around and how, like, their whatever operating systems they have.
I could have watched an entire movie about them fighting back because Matthew McConaughey kind of treats them like crap, and that movie is called 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
But overall, I don't know. This movie to me was... I liked it overall. It's wildly uneven. Like, the parts that worked, I thought, worked fantastically. Visually, it's just so spectacular to look at, especially in IMAX, IMAX, the way we saw it. It just, like, there were moments where I was just, like, sitting there going, like, wow, that just looks so cool. And then, like, the emotional stuff, surprisingly, works way better than you would think for a Christopher Nolan movie. There were parts that I was, like, crying when he's, you know, because Matthew McConaughey and his daughter, the bond that they share is really the heart of the movie. And there were parts of the movie where I was crying over it. But then, wow, when this movie doesn't work, it really doesn't work. There are things that just come out of the blue. There are characters that have entire conversation and philosophical platitudes that don't really mean anything. Like, people will keep, you know, reiterating themes instead of, like, you know, trying to show you what's going on. They'll just say the themes of the movie out loud. There's a poem that just keeps getting repeated, like, 8 times by every single character. Like,
and there's some really shoddy action sequences in this movie. Like, I've had several people... Yes, I think there's a character who dies, and I think you two will know who I'm saying, but I'm not going to get into it. But, like, I had people ask me afterwards what happened to that character, because that scene is so bungled that they were like, wait, did he die? What happened?
And the thing is, I love that scene. I had absolutely no problem following the geography and where the characters were, and when that did happen, I mean, I bought it.
I hated this movie.
I know.
Yeah, I... Like, I just felt like it took forever for them to actually get into space, and there's all these weird, like, interviews with old people being like, oh, yes, whenever the Earth was blah, 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 we had dust on the table all the time. And I'm like, well, this kind of kills the tension, because you're suggesting already that people are going to live to be old, when this has been, like, the whole narrative thrust of the movie is, like, Matthew McConaughey, in theory, goes to space to save his children and their generation, and then you have old people talking, you're like, oh, well, they're talking about when they were children, so at least... Matthew McConaughey's generation of children has managed to survive.
So you felt like the movie was, like, putting its own spoilers in the beginning? I don't know. Yeah. That didn't really bother me. I knew that that was what was coming, but I don't know.
It didn't bother me at all.
It was about the journey.
I love the first act of the film. The first act of the film to me felt like, you know, the beginning of a disaster movie. That kind of excitement that builds when you know something terrible is coming and
kind of like trying
to save the world.
Yeah.
Granted, there were some believability issues with the fact that he just stumbles upon NASA and, like, in a split second, he's, like, the pilot of that big mission out of the blue. I mean, it'd be one thing if...
You found us. That's basically qualifications to lead a space mission that's going to save the entire planet or not.
Yeah, within, like, 12 hours, he's leaving, and I actually had a problem with that because...
Well, there's also something that's supposed to justify that, like, why that happens that...
Is there?
That is one of my biggest problems with the movie. But anyway, I mean... It'd be one thing if NASA was seeking him out or something.
I also take huge issue with the fact that this movie has been promoted regularly by the fact that it's supposed to be hard sci-fi. They kept talking about how, like, it's based on the work of actual physicists and actual study of wormholes and stuff. And then we get into the second act, and a theme becomes love is science. Like, oh my god.
Oh my god. Okay, how Christopher Nolan is it that the only way he can deal with human emotions like love is, like, how do I... analyze this from a scientific / mathematical standpoint. That's like the Christopher Nolan.
I did kind of appreciate thing I've ever heard. That though in this movie, because like
I'm not knocking it.
I can't say that I was taking it very seriously, but how can you have people go on a mission like that and then not come to the point where they're like, oh, like blah 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 science, but then
feelings
I need to think about my family too.
Let's science.
You I think so. Let's fuse those feelings together and figure out what's the best step to take now.
I think the problem is that
arguing like passion versus science is one thing. He is arguing that passion is science, and that made me, especially because he put it in the mouth of the only lady scientist on that mission, it just drove me insane.
I think the way that he introduced that theme is clunky. I think the way he explores it is also very clunky, but, you know, it's an interesting take that I guess we haven't seen that much before. But the thing is, the way it's introduced is that Anne Hathaway's character decides to... pin the hopes of humanity on some guy that she has a crush on that up until she says this, I did not even realize she had ever met this other character who we haven't met at this point either, so it was just like very out of the blue. And she's just like, maybe love is science or something like that, and you're just like, wait, what? And like, I definitely was sitting in the theater and I did like that sideways head tilt where I was like, where are you going with this, Nolan?
It was definitely out of the blue, and there is a lot of that in this film, and I think my two biggest problems with the film that actually took me out of the film. Going back to that, so I didn't have a problem with the whole love thing because at that point I was so engrossed in what was happening and I was enjoying it almost as like, I mean, kind of like a big budget action film in a way. I was very taken by what was happening and I was along for the ride. The two things that took me out of it that made me think, you know, these parts suck is I actually really didn't like Jessica Chastain in this film. I thought that that young girl, I know there was nothing she could do, but when you compare what she's doing in the film to what her younger counterpart does in the film, she's completely out-acted by this little girl.
That little girl is very good.
But that little girl is from Twilight.
There's so much more life to the character in her younger years. It's incredible.
But this is a terribly written character, because this is a character who is mad at her dad at the age of 9 because he went into space, and she stays mad at him for, like, 30 more years and progresses not at all, and then, like, does these, like, passive-aggressive, not even passive-aggressive, aggressive-aggressive videos where she's like, hey, Dad, I'm calling you in space because I'm your age and you're not back from space. I'm like, fuck this movie.
I kind of bought that, too. Horrible things that happen to you when you're a kid, like, you know, being abandoned by your parent, that's not something that you easily get over, and it makes sense that we don't see, you know, this.
She gets one emotion to play this whole goddamn movie, and it's being disappointed in her dad.
No, she gets to be like, Eureka, Eureka! Or when a scientist makes a discovery, they actually yell Eureka and throw papers around.
Wait, but the other thing that took me out of this movie is the ending. Because, like, the ending essentially winds up defining the entire experience, and I'm not going to spoil the movie or anything.
I don't even know how I would spoil that ending. I can't explain it.
I could probably take a stab at it, but I'm not going to because it would ruin the movie. But if that ending doesn't hit home for you, it does kind of ruin everything. And I wouldn't say that it completely missed the mark for me. I found it interesting and I enjoyed trying to think about it, but I can't say I was able to wrap my head around it in a way that made me walk away feeling satisfied. But at the same time, I did walk out of that movie saying, oh, like, that was an exciting, enthralling movie. I'm glad I saw that. I'd be curious to see it again to see what other details I could find.
You know, one thing I want to say about this movie is that, so we saw this in Big Hero 6, like, I saw them, you know, 2 days apart, and if I had to give them, like, number ratings, I would say I'd probably give them each, like, I don't know, 7 out of 10-ish, right? But Big Hero 6 was, you know, they did something really well, but they did something kind of familiar and executed it well. I have to give Interstellar a lot of credit for being just, like, bonkers ambitious. It's incredibly ambitious. It's trying really hard to do something different. It doesn't succeed all the time. There are lots of parts where it's adamantly not succeeding, in my opinion, but I just, you know, I admire that. It felt refreshing to watch a movie like this after, you know, watching, like, 8 superhero movies this year.
I'm glad you two liked it, just because it's so long that, like, I'm glad more people don't agree with me, because I just hated it, and it was so long, and I was so bored. I was so disconnected from these characters, and in the end, I just thought, I would rather have watched 2001 or Gravity again.
Can I ask you a question, Christy?
Yes.
I'll give you that, though. I can't say that I was enjoying this because I was so connected to the characters. It was more like I was just having fun watching what they were doing and exploring everything with them. Oh, no, and yeah, that's definitely true, and I think that's the case here, but I think that there's still some fun to be had if that's how you're going to approach the movie.
So, Christy, Transcendence or Interstellar?
Oh, God. Which one's shorter? That's my answer.
That's awful.
I really hated both of them. I mean, I know. You know, they're both super pretentious and try to act like they're about science, but then just get into nonsense talk and have poorly defined characters that don't behave like real people. Oh, but one has Johnny Depp. Oh, God. I don't know. I don't know. I think that's my personal hell, would be being put in a room where Interstellar and Transcendence are just played on a loop.
I can imagine, if anyone is ever listening and wants to imprison Chrissy for some reason and, like, I don't know, torture state secrets out of her or something, just put her in solitary confinement with, like, you know, a DVD player and only 2 DVDs, and they're Interstellar and Transcendence.
Yeah, that's the plot to Saw 12, is I'm chained in a room and those 2 goddamn movies, and I have to cut off my own arm to get out or something.
Oh, God.
And I would, with my
teeth. I watched that movie.
So, Terrell, it sounds like thumbs down from Christy, thumbs up from Perry.
Yeah.
Mostly thumbs up from me.
All right. So, we're moving on to the last one, but I am out of here because I have to go catch a flight. But yes. Yay for Big Hero 6 and Interstellar. Don't listen to Christy, seriously. All right. I'm out of here.
Perry's leaving us because she has adventures more exotic than podcasting to go on.
You know, maybe just a little bit. This is a cool one, but I will see you guys next week.
So we're going to pick up with Nightcrawler, which actually came out last week, but we had to pick this one up because it is bonkers, and I have a suspicion it will be in the Oscars contest. So this is actually the directorial debut of Dan Gilroy, who is a screenwriter, and it stars Jake Gyllenhaal as an opportunistic man who is typically a night owl, and while he's kind of out wheeling and dealing at night trying to make a buck, he comes across these people called Nightcrawlers, and they are basically freelance videographers who shoot terrible things that happen to people, like muggings and home invasions and stuff like that, for the news, and they sell it at a profit.
Yeah, like, you know, whenever you watch, like, the local news at 10, and there's, like, some, like, horrible maimed corpse on the ground, and you're just like, where the fuck do people even get this material from people like this? That's what the movie's about.
And it's an interesting movie, because it basically follows kind of his path to success and descent in morality. And that might sound really dry, but no, this movie is bonkers, and I fucking loved it. It was so much fun, because part of it is that it's an R movie that revels in being an R movie, and I tend to appreciate that. But, like, it's, like, also...
But not in a way that's gratuitous.
No.
Yeah.
But it's, like, definitely, like, for mature audiences, because it's a satirical look at this culture of, I wouldn't say just news reporting, but our culture in general that kind of is inherently attracted to something kind of gruesome, and the guys who feed on that. Like, this guy's a vulture. He will scavenge the most depressing and disgusting moments of your life to get a paycheck, and we follow him on this journey, and it's just fucking captivating. And what's really crazy to me is how funny I found this movie, because it is disturbing. But Jake Gyllenhaal is a blast in this. He lost, I'm hearing, between 20 and 35 pounds. Point is, boy lost weight, and it's not like scary Dallas Buyers Club McConaughey weight, but it's enough weight that he goes from being like Jake Gyllenhaal, chubby cheeks and handsome and we like him and affable, to like he looks like a creeper.
It makes him look like very hollowed out, and he already has big eyes just like a person, but it makes it so that his eyes are just like huge and they're always like staring at you unblinking. Jake Gyllenhaal's performance is really what makes this movie. Like I was telling Chrissy after I saw it, I have seen Jake Gyllenhaal in plenty of things. I've liked him in a lot of things. You know, he's not the kind of actor that always plays the same character, but after watching this movie, it retroactively made me creeped out by anything I've ever seen him in. It made me be like, I don't know if I can ever believe that Jake Gyllenhaal is not this horrible person. And I mean, that says a lot. Like, it's, you know, a good actor will make you believe, like, that they are absolutely this person. Jake Gyllenhaal's performance in this is so good that it became momentarily very difficult for me to believe that he could possibly be anything else.
Anything less than a horrible person.
Right. I mean, it's just from the first frame, it's immediately clear who this character is because he has such a good grasp on him. And it's immediately clear that there's just something off about this character, something that just makes your skin crawl even when he's not doing anything inherently evil.
Yeah, it's really kind of fascinating, and, like, the script is really smart and funny, and Jake Gyllenhaal gets it, and he really runs with it, and, like, I genuinely do think that he should be in the Best Actor race. I'm not seeing his name bandied around as much as, like, you know, Eddie Redmayne, who's in the Stephen Hawking biopic, or Benedict Cumberbatch, who is in the Alan Turing biopic, or Steve Carell, who's in The Foxcatcher,
It's not the kind of movie that is usually in the Oscar race as, like, you know, it's not an Oscar-baity movie, and that's fine, but I really hope that they do find room to, you know, at least acknowledge the incredible work Jake Gyllenhaal does here, because I would really put it with any other, you know, leading man performance I've seen this year.
I completely agree. I think he's been doing an astounding job. I'm looking to see who's promoting this in the... Okay, Open Road Films. Here's hoping Open Road actually does put something toward the award season circuit, because I think he's outstanding in this, and, like, it's a smaller movie, but it actually opened wide, and...
I was surprised that it opened wide. The other thing I said to Chrissy immediately after walking on this movie, I think I texted her right away, and I said, I cannot believe Nightcrawler is a wide release, because it's just...
It's a very different movie.
It's very different. It's very dark. Just, like, not dark in the sense that it's overly graphic, really, although there's some gory stuff.
The content is disturbing.
It's just dark, like, in your soul. It has a dark, cynical soul. It's very, like, disturbing. It's funny.
You didn't think that it's funny, yeah.
It's very, like, twisted. It's, like, not the, you know, it's not, like, the nice, feel-good, like, fun thing that you would think a wide release would usually be.
That's totally true. And there's also, I want to point out, Renee Russo's in this, and she's actually apparently married to the writer-director, which is wonderful because Renee Russo is great in this, so if it takes, like, him making more movies to get more of Renee Russo, let's keep doing this, because
I think after this movie came out, everyone was collectively like, oh man, Renee Russo, why hasn't she been around more? I wish she had been around more, because that's how I felt.
It's really cool, because she's kind of at, like, the other end of the spectrum, where she's one of the people buying the tapes from him, but she's, like, working at, like, a low-rung police station and or a news station, and so they have this kind of very parasitic relationship that grows in ways that is really fun to watch but really screwed up. I feel like if you enjoy, like, American Horror Story for its kind of ghoulish storytellings and not so much its graphic nature, you need to see Nightcrawler. Like,
I don't know. American Horror Story is a fucking feel-good tale compared to Nightcrawler. I think it's because when you watch American Horror Story, like, you know, horrible things happen, but it all feels very, like, fanciful. This one, horrible things happen, and while the characters are exaggerated, you can definitely recognize things about, like, their attitudes or the way that they look at the world that you see in yourself or in the people around you or the world around you, and that's what makes this so kind of unsettling.
It's kind of funny because one of the points that defines Lou Bloom as a character is that he is, it's kind of like he's read every self-help book on, like, how to deal with people, and he rambles off this rhetoric about, like, how he's a go-getter and how he's this and this and this, and, like, as a freelancer, I was listening to all this and being like, I need to learn some of this pattern. This guy is a sociopath, and I'm aware of that, but he makes some interesting points. And it's just kind of funny because you see there's some stuff there that you're like, it plays into that kind of whole American dream concept, which Angie and I talked about it a little bit, which can get a little tiresome, but I don't think so in this movie, because in this it's much more about kind of greed is good and, like, where do you draw the line? And then there's moments where you as a person watching are forced to think about what you've seen on the news and how that footage might have been gotten. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it makes us complicit in this movie and in the way the news is covered in a way that's, like, subtle and not as in your face as some other stories do. And it made me feel really uncomfortable, but in a way that felt rich. And, like, I walked out of this movie feeling exhilarated and, like, with my head kind of spit, the gears, like, churning and thinking about a lot of things in our actual world. So that was really cool. But I feel like also if you just want to watch a bonkers movie that actually has some incredible car chase scenes, like, astounding car chase scenes, this is a
They're
really,
really
fun
well
movie.
Done. Because car chases a lot of times are just kind of like, things are speeding and I don't know what's happening. Oh, something exploded. But these, you feel like you're in the car with them. It's really thrilling. And you can actually always tell where the cars are in relation to each other at any given time, which is something that movies do not do well a lot of the time.
I remember Gangster Squad, where they had two cars that were, like, the same color chasing each other in fog, and I was like, I don't know what's happening. Like,
that was the least of Gangster Squad's problems, but that's another conversation.
It's totally true. But this movie also has this really beautiful look of Los Angeles where it's, like, grimy, and it reminded me of, like, 1970s movies where everything looks dirty but kind of, like, heated, and it was really fun and beautiful to watch this movie that's really twisted, and I'm genuinely hoping that Jake Gyllenhaal gets, like, Oscar attention for this, because it's a really good performance.
This Los Angeles feels like it belongs to, like, the same corner of Los Angeles that, like, Drive, that Ryan Gosling movie did. Like, it just kind of, you know, when everyone else in LA is sleeping, all these weird creepers are out at night doing strange things.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about, I think his name is Riz Ahmed. He plays Jake Gyllenhaal's partner, and he's, like, kind of the normal person in this movie. He's the guy that you need to have in the movie so that you never completely lose sight of how insane things are getting, because he's the one that acts the way that, like, if you were in this situation.
That's a very good description.
And he is so good. I remember him from, I think he was in Four Lions, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And he was playing, like, a terrorist that was just really horrible at being a terrorist. And he's so good in this. It's a thankless role in some senses because of what I said. It's, you know, he doesn't get to do the crazy stuff. He's kind of there for a reason. He serves a purpose. But I think what he makes the most of it.
But definitely kind of he reminds us of the stakes. He reminds us that the things that are happening are crazy.
Which well, is you like, always need some character. Whenever you have a movie about things escalating, getting out of control, you always need to have that character that just like, that's crazy, guys, because otherwise you might lose sight if you get too wrapped up in this world, so that's a purpose he serves. But I think that he really makes the most of this, most of that character. You know, that character is really appealing, even though he's a much less striking personality than the other two. So I just wanted to give him a shout-out, and, you know, he did a good job.
Yeah, so I think we would both recommend Nightcrawler.
Yes. Although, I have to say, it wasn't exactly what I was... I had heard it was a thriller, and I thought that it was going to be a different kind of thriller. I guess it just...
Interesting.
It's not...
Maybe like, you thought it was going to be like a mystery thriller?
I thought it was going to be more of a mystery thriller. I thought it was going to be more... I mean, there's. It's not that there aren't enough car chases, but I guess I thought it was going to be more action mystery type of thriller. Not complaining, but I'm saying if that's... what you've come to expect, and I think that based on the trailers, I think some people might be expecting that, then it's not quite that. It's more of like a moral or psychological thriller.
That's totally true, but it is very fast-paced.
It is fast-paced. I'm not saying it's slow or boring. I'm not saying that there aren't enough car chase scenes, because there are so many, and they are so well shot.
So I think we're both going to recommend Nightcrawler. So in summation, we're saying yay, Big Hero 6. Interstellar has divided us down the middle.
Watch it! Don't listen to Chrissy.
I mean, it's messed up.
Oh,
but
God, take a nap. We didn't even get into how bad the sound is in that movie, but that's like a whole other thing. Which actually, Slash Film, your site ran a really great piece about, like,
yeah, read the Slash Film piece before you decide to shell out money for these tickets, because goodness, the sound. And yay for Nightcrawler. So I'm going to say see Nightcrawler. But before we wrap up, I want to drop, we've been meaning to do this. A listener of ours named, like, wonderfully, Rick Winters, commented on our Winter's Tale episode where we rewatched it, and apparently we were asking if microfiche is still a thing, and he wrote us this, which I thought was great. Listening to this episode now, and one of you asked if libraries still use microfiche. Until recently, I worked in a library, and yes, we did. In fact, maintaining and organizing the microfiche was my job. We had over 2 million microfiche documents, and more were coming in all the time. The U.S. government publishes thousands of them per year, although I doubt anyone else still does. If you're wondering why we still have them, we didn't get rid of them, the older ones, because digitizing them would have been too big a job. The new ones are still published because federal law requires what are called depository libraries to keep hard copies of certain documents like congressional hearings, news laws, and presumably in case there's a worldwide computer crash and all digital copies are lost. There was simply not enough room to have them on paper, but microfiche counts as a hard copy. So that's actually kind of interesting. So Rick, thank you for reaching out to us about that. I was actually really glad to know that, because I feel like that sounds like it should be a
it's
new
nice
movie.
To learn that Winter's Tale is actually slightly more plausible than we had believed it was.
It does. It gives me a warm feeling to know that Winter's Tale got at least one point right, which was exciting. And also, I, as someone who likes knowing little kernels of things, I like to know that microfiche is still a thing, and it's still a thing because the government's like, look, we can't hard back up everything, which is probably smart. I'm impressed by the government in this moment in time. But yeah, I think that's everything from us this week. So
yes, thank you so much for writing in, and if anyone else wants to call us out on questions that we have or, you know, library factoids we don't know, please do. We would love to hear it.
Yeah, we love hearing from you. So let's see. We'll wrap up. Perry is at Perry Nemiroff, and she writes for Collider. I'm at Christy Puchko, and you can find my highlights on decadentcriminals.com.
And I am at AJHAN on Twitter, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can find Popcorn and Prosecco on iTunes, where you should definitely subscribe and rank and rate us and all that good stuff. And we're on YouTube, and we have a Tumblr, and we're on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. So come find us and engage and share it with your friends and, I don't know, tell us things, and we'll tell them back to you.
That's a good way of putting
Perry's it. Perry's better at the outros. She'll be back next week. We'll all be back next week. And in the meantime, check out Nightcrawler.
Think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.